pulling back the curtain of silence
and learning what freedom feels like. I'm Nick.
And I'm Lala. This is Seen, Brown-Eyed Activism.
Healing at the intersections.
Whenever people ask me what this podcast is about, I tell them that it's about the intersection of personal healing work and collective liberation work. That's the elevator pitch.
You're so much more eloquent than I am usually. I'm like, so like, this is the, I'm still trying to like finesse and refine my delivery.
Yeah. We're working on it.
Yes.
But I realize that we maybe haven't gone fully into depth about why, like why we believe so strongly in the connection between the two and why our approach is always to be doing both.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to dive into it today. We're going to talk about the problem with doing personal healing work without the collective liberation piece. Then we're going to talk about what goes wrong when we try to do liberation work without personal healing. And then finally, we're going to get into what liberatory healing work can look like and the potential it holds for all of us.
Mm.
But first, Nick, why is the connection between healing and liberation so important to you, or how did you come to that understanding?
Yeah, good question. I think we both agree that the two are linked. You cannot separate the two from each other.
Mm-hmm.
Just thinking about how I feel in my body, how I experience my body, my thoughts, you know, these are all really personal things, right? But then I realize that I don't just live in a vacuum. My world isn't just in my head. I don't exist alone with nobody around me,
yeah.
Right? Like, I exist in greater context of people, systems, ideas, and structures. And so many of these people, structures, ideas, systems, etc., simply don't wish me well because of reasons well beyond my control. You know, their purpose is to keep me captive, to keep me controlled, to keep me under the eye of and surveillance of their gaze. So for me, to heal is to be free.
Yes.
Right? And I can't be free if I'm out here fucking shit up for everybody else, because like Beyonce says, when you play me, you play yourself. And more eloquently, when Audre Lorde says, you know, I am not free. I mean, that is motherfucking eloquent. When you play me, you play yourself. I think that's beautiful. But Audre Lorde also says that. She says, I am not free if any woman is unfree. So I've come to understand this through witnessing types of people around me whose politics I felt really fell flat on their face when push came to shove and you're asking really tough questions about how the world actually works, you know?
Yeah.
It's not enough anymore, and maybe it was never enough. I'm going to say it was never enough for us to simply focus on ourselves alone without considering how we affect and are connected to the world just beyond ourselves.
Totally. Yeah, so you pretty much said it all. Yeah.
Yeah,
and for me, my pain and my trauma in the world has always been very easily traced to systems of oppression, and I always found that healing approaches that weren't taking that into account weren't effective. And a lot of times they even just hurt me more, like white therapists who would say racist shit to me, or they didn't get the relevance of things I was bringing up to them,
right?
Which just made me feel more alone and shut me down even more
in that space too, because you're like, hey, I'm the person in like need of support, I don't need you to,
yeah.
Like, you don't walk into therapy being like, I'm gonna get gaslit, I'm
yeah,
a therapist,
right?
Like,
exactly,
yeah.
And then when I tried to engage in social justice spaces, I know I was just doing it from this really wounded place, and then I just ended up feeling kind of lost and uncomfortable in those spaces. So this connection between healing and liberation is very felt and very personal to me, and I believe in it so much that it's now the basis of my whole career.
Yeah,
because I do anti-oppressive counseling. That's like on my website, anti-oppressive counseling.
Yes.
And it's the whole foundation of my practice, and basically everything that I want to do in the world, like all of my visions and ideas are all based around this.
Mm-hmm.
So I am very passionate.
No.
So we're gonna
shit
get into this. Yeah. So, let's get into what happens when you try to do healing work and you don't have the politics. And I, again, have so many thoughts and feelings about this as a therapist, because I think a lot of people in my field are dropping the ball here.
Right.
Have you ever gone to a therapist that didn't have politics? Or, like, do you follow any of the Instagram therapists who don't have politics? Or
yeah, good question. So I haven't had the misfortune of going to a therapist that has shit politics, because you referred me to a therapist.
Yeah.
And I was like, she's a fucking shit.
Yeah,
like,
she
she's
is.
Amazing. I didn't have to like wade through that. I skipped a step, I guess. But I definitely come across social media related therapists and healers who spend most of their, well, I guess from my perception, spend most of their time on social media really pumping positive thinking outlooks into the ether, like changing your mindset, and these are all helpful things. Like, these are helpful things, right? I think there's space for that. There's value for that. There's importance for those things. But I always, I don't know, I found that they're kind of unrealistic sometimes, or maybe I just find they're not rooted in the here and now or connected to why the why, you know, like we're not curious about anything beyond the personal body experience. And so we're not thinking about the bigger systems and the bigger forces and the behaviors that are harmful that affect us, right? It's just like, oh, you know, don't let the haters win. Like, and I'm not saying that it's that shallow. There are people that are doing like incredible work. But I think it's kind of like that spiritual bypassing term that we discussed in our episode on spirituality, where it's like there's shit that we need to deal with, but we're just like, let's skip a step sort of thing.
Totally.
We're focusing so much on skipping that step and like trying to address something that exists, whereas we should be focusing on like the root cause and the problem. And I think oftentimes we just dress up our problems in like really cute outfits without wondering like why, you know, I'm positive and I'm manifesting and I'm doing all the things, like why is my life still shit, or like why am I still experiencing alienation and all these other things that like just focusing on yourself can't tell you the answer.
Yes, exactly. Because we exist as part of systems. And it's like you said, we don't exist in a vacuum. So me thinking positively isn't going to make racism go away.
No.
And often the people who rely on those really simplified answers are really privileged. They're living in the West. They're white or light skinned. You know, they have money. They're cis. They're thin. They have these major advantages that allow you to believe that what happens to you is entirely within your control.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's like those folks have never had to really think about systemic oppression because they've never experienced it. They've been on the winning side of that the whole time.
Exactly.
Right?
So
it's like,
or they've experienced it, but they have enough privilege that they can get around it.
Yeah. And so for me, I'm always just like, why would I take advice from you? Like, like honestly, though, I'm like, advice that's given to me by people who've never lived my experience or can't even understand the things that are stacked up against me,
totally.
It's not really helpful for me. That's just a personal
you
know, decision that I'm making.
Yeah, exactly. And then the thing is, when you're trying to heal without politics, you're missing what the wounds really are.
Mm.
Like, you can't treat something if you don't know what it is, right?
Say that again.
Yeah. An example. So in a training group that I did for therapists a couple of years back, one of the things that we did was practice sessions where one of us would be the client and then another one would be the therapist and then we'd debrief after.
Okay.
So I had this session where I was being the client and then there was another woman who was the counselor, and she wasn't even white. She was East Asian. But I was trying to talk about systemic barriers that I was coming up against because I'd also had to leave a job recently where I was being discriminated against.
Right.
And whenever you talk about systemic oppression, and like I'd had all these experiences with white counselors who had gaslit me or just like didn't get it. And so, you know, I was approaching it carefully because I don't know if I'm going to be understood, or I don't know if I'm going to get labeled as like hostile or overly sensitive or crazy or whatever it is. Yeah. So I was trying to like.
So you're walking into therapy, like you're walking into this already aware of that shit.
Yeah.
Like, can you imagine though? Like, it's not like you're like, oh, I can just like the chains of all the things that the world holds me back, I can just release. And like, you're walking into a space we're supposed to be thinking about healing aware of that shit.
Exactly.
Like, that's already fucked up.
Exactly.
Sorry, continue.
So I was sneaking up to the topic in a few different ways, mm-hmm. including talking about how I saw people reacting differently to my friends who I said have blonde hair and blue eyes. That was like my kind of like
that's
code for their white,
yeah,
right?
Because yeah.
Even just saying the word white can like get people's backs up.
100%. Man, isn't that? Oh, Lord.
I know.
Continue.
It's so sad.
White.
Yeah. So she didn't touch that at all. Mm-hmm. And she just kept trying to make it like a personal insecurity issue that I was having. And luckily, I was far enough along in my own work that I knew that the problem was her.
Right.
But so often people aren't. And like, I hadn't been earlier in my experiences where I'd had other therapists do similar things.
Mm-hmm.
And therapists are in position of power, right? We're seen as experts and we're seen as authority figures. So how often is someone trying to reach out for support and then being shut down by the person in front of them who's either threatened by the topic or just fully doesn't get it?
Totally. And like, you're so vulnerable, like even
exactly.
getting to the place where you're like, I want to go seek support or I want to go seek like expertise. Right? That's not like everyone even gets there.
Exactly.
It takes so much courage to get to that place.
Totally. And then when you're in this like really vulnerable state, then you're way more vulnerable to harm.
Yeah. And then the harm that's done in those spaces is like even more catastrophic because you're
exactly.
like, oh, I let somebody in and like they pretty much made me feel like I was literally, you know, I'm jealous of blue eyes.
Exactly.
What? What are you talking about?
Exactly. Yeah. And then how are you going to walk into a space like that again when therapy is supposed to be?
You're not.
Yeah,
you're just
exactly.
not. Yeah.
So yeah, I debriefed with this counselor after the incident, and it turned out that she literally didn't understand that I was trying to talk about race. Like, she in her head was like, why would it matter if someone had blue eyes? I'm serious, like, this is how
I'm looking at Lala, like she's fucking like a clown. I'm like, what the fuck?
That was
nuts.
That was me at the time. And there's so many, honestly, so many counselors, they just aren't even, and maybe even this is a more obvious example. I mean, you would think it was an obvious example, but this is happening so much where people are bringing in their experience. And if you don't, if you haven't educated yourself, if you don't have context for it, you're going to miss what they're talking about.
That reminds me of an episode of Insecure when Molly's talking about how she went to go see, like, she finally finds a Black therapist. Yes. And then she's like, this experience is so different from my previous experience going to, you know, so-and-so who, you know, wanted to unpack my use of, you know, say nigga. It's like white therapists who just didn't understand, like, cultural context and stuff like that, right? It's like having somebody, anyways.
And so, and that's the thing. We're going to end up pathologizing people.
Right?
Like, that white therapist is pathologizing Molly
and being like, she says n-word, she's anti-black herself,
like how she's internalized all of this, right? And so if we see that somebody's hurt and we can't see what's hurting them, then we're just gonna see, oh, there's something wrong with you because nothing's hurting you, but you're like, you're bringing this hurt to it. So I have clients come in and talk to me about incidents and not really know why it's, or not be able to put words to why it's hurtful to them. Mm. But because I'm doing this work and I'm thinking about power dynamics, I can help them put language to it, right? And if I hadn't been working so hard at understanding politics for so long, then I wouldn't be able to do that.
Yes.
Yeah. And then another reason that healing doesn't work without liberation is that a lot of us literally can't access healing because barriers to healing are rooted in systemic oppression. So what gets in between us and healing? It's the lack of money when you can't pay for therapy, or you can't take a day off work when you're unwell. Or it's the colonialism and the white supremacy that stole our cultural medicines and healing and spiritual practices. There is the lack of access to healers who understand us or come from our communities because of systemic racism and transphobia and ableism and capitalism and all of the things that keep marginalized folks out of training programs. So how are we going to heal if we can't access tools for healing?
And it's like the people who need the tools for healing the most are the ones who can't access it the most.
Exactly.
Right? Like among my friends, I go to therapy, but I have plenty of friends who've never been able to afford therapy.
Yeah.
And like, they could benefit from therapy. Right? But it's just, there's so much privilege rooted in the ability to access that support as it stands. And then you end up having folks who are part of the communities that they're hoping to support, like you, who do beautiful things like offering therapy on sliding scales, for example. You know, it's like the people who are needing access the most and the folks who are providing that access are also kind of bending over backwards and trying to do the most that they can to provide that access. But it's like, we need more than the us's doing that work, the you's doing that work.
Totally.
Right?
Because I do as much as I can on sliding scale, and there's times where I should probably maybe not even offer as low rates as I do at times because of my own, making my own living. And then you have, oh, it's the queer women of color in the field that are making the most sacrifices.
That's what I'm
to
saying.
To try to, right? And then there's people making so much money that could offer a lot lower rates that just don't even bother to.
Yeah.
But even my low rates, like, there's some people who just can't afford anything extra.
Absolutely.
And then what's the point? Like, what are we doing if we're trying to offer healing, but not the people who need it the most can't even get in the room?
Exactly.
So now let's talk about what happens when we try to do liberation work without doing our personal healing work.
Mm.
So we've all been socialized into a world that runs on horrifically violent systems of oppression, and we've all internalized them. So these systems are not just out there. They're held deeply within us. We have unhealthy relationships with power. We're accustomed to violence. We have internalized biases that we filter the world through without even realizing it. So then how can we imagine the radical possibilities of true liberation and not just, you know, a reconfiguration of the quote unquote master's tools without doing the work to find and heal all of the ways we've been hurt and limited by oppression?
Yeah, I don't think it's possible, right? Like, I think that in order for us to dream and establish our own liberation, because mark my words, white people are not going to be trying to dream and establish our liberation. We need to do that shit on our own. We must be invested and curious and interested in our own personal liberation and our own healing for ourselves. To separate those two from each other creates very unsustainable solutions for us. I'm not saying that it's impossible, but like, what do you have left to give to yourself if you're focused on the liberation work that you can't still see how, like, you aren't free and you're still hurting?
Totally.
You know?
Yeah. And then you get things like, and I'm almost afraid to say his name because of the fact that he does this, but Sean King threatening young queer Black people with legal action.
Wait, which, can you explain this? I don't even know what you're talking about.
Oh, I'm a little afraid to, but so
allegedly.
He's done this in several instances, but the one that brought a lot of the other ones to light was a young Black queer woman named Clarissa Brooks.
Okay.
Had tweeted something about him, and it turned out that thing was untrue, but there have been a lot of allegations against him.
Okay.
And this untrue thing that I guess she just didn't do enough research before tweeting, it really did fall in line with a lot of other allegations that have happened against him.
Sure. So we're not, yeah.
Terms of, yeah, stealing work potentially from Black women, and or not using funds raised properly. And I'm not saying, I don't know. I haven't done my research.
These are allegations.
I don't know what the truth is about that. And I do know that the thing that she tweeted did turn out to be untrue, and she deleted it when she realized that.
Okay.
And then he was threatening her with legal action, and he, you know, tweeted her name and had, because he has this huge platform.
Like a million people on Instagram.
Exactly.
Sure.
And she had very few, and again, was a very young queer Black woman student, and she had to leave social media because of the level of harassment against her.
And yeah, he knows that that's so wrong.
And he ended up apologizing for that one, but a lot of other people then were like, oh, here's a letter of Sean King threatening legal action against me. And this is the thing. Yeah, even in cases where, you know, something untrue is said about him, you're quite literally using the master's tools, right? By using this oppressive system against less powerful people in your own movement.
Yeah.
So maybe he was wronged in some of these cases. But this is what I mean. Like, we're not doing the proper work if within our own communities and movements we're using
violent tools.
Systems, to deal with our conflict between us.
We need to find alternatives.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then there's all the transphobic feminists or, you know, activists.
Can we really even call them fucking feminists?
No.
So, okay, cool. Just wanted to say that.
Yeah.
TERFs, you're just going to get an acronym there. You're not going to be called anything else. Yeah,
exactly. And then there's activists committing acts of sexual violence. I mean, there's Gandhi. There's stories of Gandhi committing exploitation and his anti-Blackness. So it gets really bad, right?
Yeah, and I think the thing that you're hitting on is like, we can chew gum and walk, right? Like we can be like, we are capable as people of doing harm and good,
yes,
all within the same, you know, body and within the same identity, within the same person. So I think it's really incumbent upon all of us to realize that duality exists. It's not necessarily like just because we all are like rallying for the same thing, we're all going to come to the same conclusions in the same kinds of ways or treat each other the same kind of ways.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. And so that's the thing. It's, we've all internalized this toxicity. And so if we're not doing our personal work, we're just going to act it out. It's the hurt people kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
And then I have another big example of how personal healing work is needed for liberation work. And it's inspired by the book My Grandmother's Hands by a therapist named Resma Menakem.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't be the person that I am if I didn't say that there are things in this book that I find deeply problematic.
Mm-hmm.
But we all get things wrong. And I think it's important to not throw the baby out with the bathwater, so we can still talk about what he says that we find useful, even if we don't agree with other things.
Chewing gum and walking.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, that's the theme. So the major idea of the book that I agree with is that many or even most of us are going into fight, flight, freeze, or fawn mode when we're dealing with these issues around social justice, because they're highly traumatic and they're linked to our survival or our deaths. So he's talking about race and specifically focuses on anti-Blackness in the US, but I think this applies much more broadly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so most of us have heard of fight or flight mode, and I think it's increasingly well known that freeze is also a part of that response, but the least well known is fawn, and it's basically people-pleasing. Like, it's the survival technique of making the threat like you or making them take mercy on you. And I think that's really key in this kind of response, I think, in these contexts, because for a lot of marginalized people, and Black and Indigenous folks in particular, and a lot of trans folks in particular, we've been trained that if white people or cis people are uncomfortable with us or see us as threatening, it might literally lead to our deaths.
Which oftentimes it does.
Yeah, like think of police violence, think of hate crimes, think of corrective violence.
Think about the number of trans women who have been murdered and gone missing.
Exactly,
you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And Black trans women in particular.
Yes.
And then think about how much seeing those things happening in our communities trains us to feel like we could be next. Yeah. How is this landing with you?
Yeah, no, I totally see the piece about fawning and people pleasing. I think, like you said, it's part of survival in so many ways for us. Mm-hmm. I think about what that's looked like for me in public spaces, or if I've experienced, you know, walking down the street and being catcalled.
Yeah.
You know, that idea of like making the, like you said, making the threat like you. I think this is something we got to be more nuanced in our understanding of responses to threats, right?
Yeah.
Like, and oftentimes the types of rhetoric that are spewed at sexual assault survivors, where it's like, yeah, well, did you try to do the XYZ thing? And it's like, okay, but in a situation like this, like, I'm trying to live. I'm trying, yeah, to make it out okay and alive, right? So there's lots of things that we end up doing to make sure that we can escape dangerous and threatening situations. I wish it wasn't something we had to do, you know, fawning in general, but I think until we get new information that lets us feel safe and comfortable to respond to trauma and these situations of danger in authentic, truthful ways, I really can't see how we can expect any of the, you know, flight, fight, freeze, fawn responses to go anywhere.
Totally. And like you brought up, when people will say, sexual assault survivors, why didn't you do this or this?
Right.
A lot of times, like, when that survival mode is triggered in us, it's really outside of our control. Like,
that shit's innate, right?
It's primal. Yeah. It goes into our systems, kind of take over to do what they feel like they need to do to survive.
Right.
But the thing is about therapy, over time, we can start to shift some of these things. So I talk a lot about the window of tolerance, mm-hmm, where, you know, there is a kind of range of intensity that our system is able to tolerate. And when we get outside of that, that's where we go into fight, flight, freeze, or fawn. And over time, we can do healing work and learn to regulate our systems in such a way that we're able to expand our window of tolerance so that we can handle more without going into that mode.
Right.
Or so that maybe because of trauma that we've been through, our fight response is dormant. Because we've learned early in life that
fighting responses
makes it worse.
Makes more danger for you.
Exactly. Right. But if we do some healing of those deep traumas, we can start to get our fight response available to us again. So even if we are outside of our window of tolerance, maybe we'll have fight available to us as an option.
Right.
So this is where the healing work can really help us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just marginalized folks who are having these trauma responses. Like, people in power do too. And I think it's often rooted in deep shame, and it's rooted in fear, because it kind of disgusts me to have to say it, but a lot of white people have deeply internalized the idea that Black and brown folks are threatening to their safety.
Yeah.
And a lot of cishet people seem to feel an existential threat when they come into contact with queer and trans folks.
So true.
It's true. It's disgusting, but that's the world we live in.
Yeah.
And so we need to be doing healing work to figure out when this is happening and move beyond it as much as we can, because we can't learn and evolve into higher possibilities when we're in survival mode all the time.
Mm.
So we're engaging in these conversations about race and gender and sexuality, and we're trying to do the liberation work, but we're doing it from this super triggered place where we're not actually moving forward, because survival mode is inherently conservative.
Right.
It's not about growing. It's about, like, making
protecting,
it through.
Keeping things.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right.
So we're just hurting ourselves and each other more as we try to do the work.
And like, we're doing the work while experiencing the trauma. We're doing a lot.
Yeah.
We're doing the most.
Yeah, exactly. So we're getting a strong sense now of why healing and liberation are inextricable, I hope. And I want to start to look toward what it means to fight for both of those things. And I want to move into that by talking about our Woman of Color of the Week.
Do it.
So Esther Arma is a Black woman who grew up in England and in Ghana and has also lived in the U.S. She coined the term emotional justice to talk about the right and the imperative that Black and African communities have to heal from the legacies of unhealed trauma in these communities that have survived colonization, slavery, apartheid, and other atrocities. So she and her family survived horrific violence during the 1966 military coup that happened in Ghana. And she's talked about how her family suffered in silence in the aftermath of that trauma and how that shaped her understanding of the healing that's needed and why. So she says, quote, "The legacy from wounds sustained in the movement battles of those histories must be tended to so the next stage of growth can occur. Untended scars create fresh wounds. Wounded people then hurt other people because they are not fully developed emotionally. That lack of emotional development impacts your sense of self, security, confidence, and relationships. In leadership, it creates an emotional fragility that corrodes our institutions.
Hashtag 45,
right? Mm-hmm. She goes on to say, at this moment, in this time, emotional justice is the logical next step for a people whose battles have humanized nations. Isn't that so beautiful? Mm-hmm. We've earned the right to heal from the untreated trauma. We owe ourselves an emotionally healthy world. Without emotional justice, short-term solutions continue. Old formulas that serve a few but neglect the many flourish. Without it, we continue to give away pieces of ourselves, our nations, never ensuring that the next generation can do better. Our story is not just blood, death, sacrifice, struggle, violence, and pain. It's also resistance, power, success, evolution, revolution, victory, and dignity. We got here. We made it. Survival is no longer our story. Emotional justice can be.
Beautiful. Wow, that is so weighty. I kind of want to reread that again and again and again and again.
Right?
That's a really gorgeous way to affirm the imperative that we have as brown and black folks to like move past the stage of just trying to make it out alive, you know?
Yeah.
And I want that so much for us.
Yeah.
But there's so many things in the way. And I think it's such an interesting, and I think we know this when we hear and understand more and more about intergenerational trauma, about how things that our family members experienced are really truly living with inside of our bodies. And if that's true, then like they're living inside our bodies, even though we didn't experience those things. Right.
Yeah.
So I think this is a beautiful, nuanced way of weaving all that shit together to make us understand like, we don't have to live like this. My sister always says that. She'd be like, we don't have to live this way is like the takeaway for me when I read that.
Exactly. That there's something more that's possible and that it's all within us and we deserve.
Right.
We deserve the healing work.
And then that part of like, we got here. We made it. It's like we're, you know, that phrase, I am my ancestors' wildest dreams.
Yeah.
It's like we really motherfucking are, though, because we weren't supposed to be here.
Yeah.
I wasn't supposed to be in Canada. Mm-hmm. We were all supposed to be where we were supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And so it's like the act of defiance that our ancestors have always enacted that got us here. And that came with a lot of suffering and harm that, you know, we experience, too, because that's how the world works. I think it's just we deserve so much more.
Totally. And I think I really like how a lot of times healing work is maybe seen as either frivolous or seen as horrible, like sort of not, you don't want to go there. You don't want to have to like revisit those feelings and things like that. And I like the way she talks about it because it really makes me feel like it's this incredible, like glorious thing that we're so lucky that we get to do and that it can take us to the next level.
And honestly, that's how I felt about my own therapy experience. I was so hesitant for about like a year and a half where I knew that I really wanted to seek therapy and an expert in terms of like helping me move through a lot of shit. Mm-hmm. But there was so much fear. And now as I'm, you know, working through a lot of it, I think I can say for myself the beauty and the strength that I'm seeing in myself and recognizing like I've survived shit, you know, like I think it really helps us to see our whole life stories and then understand how we're connected to our ancestors as well and see like we're part of something so much bigger.
Totally. And I've, in my experience in my own therapy, I could never have imagined what healing could do for me, like where it could take me. Mm-hmm. And so much of it, I was lucky to have good therapists, but so much of it came from within my own system.
Right.
And then taking me to these places that if I hadn't done that intentional work, even though it was within me, I never would have been able to find it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's then true for us collectively, right? Like when we start doing this healing work and we start doing it in our communities and we bring it both to ourselves as individuals and us as collectives, we won't even be able to imagine right now where this could take us.
Yeah, totally. We don't know. We genuinely don't know.
Yeah.
We're dipping our toes into it right now, but like we don't have any clue. It's a beautiful mystery.
Exactly. So I feel like we've really covered it, that healing is political and doing the work to create a world in which healing is possible for us is also political. And so we can't be free until we heal, and we'll never be able to fully heal until we're free. Mm-hmm. So let's start talking a little bit about what that might look like. And because I'm a counselor, I have to take a minute to talk to other wellness professionals and healers. And I mean this broadly, like anyone who's trusted by others to support their healing. Because we I feel that we occupy a sacred space in our communities because people trust us with so much vulnerability and they tell us things that at times they've never told another person. Mm. And there's such an incredible responsibility to that. And so what does it mean to have genuine empathy and care for the people that we work with? Because I can't hold their pain if I refuse to look at the causes of that pain. And if I see the way systems of oppression harm the beautiful human beings that sit with me in the therapy room, then how can I not be angry about that? And how can that not call me to action? Because I can't hold their pain in the therapy room and then walk back out into the world and not care enough to do whatever I can do to disrupt the systems that harm them. It seems cold and callous to witness trauma in the therapy room and then just like turn that off when you're not being paid.
Honestly, it's always fascinating when I see or encounter people who are like, yeah, I'm a professional insert, like, you know, mental health wellness mm-hmm. person, but they're, you know, their behaviors and their attitudes, the way they treat regular people who aren't either paying clients rather, are atrocious. You're like, what the fuck? How are you supporting people in their times of need and their most vulnerable places in your therapy room when this is your attitude, this is your behavior, this is how you are? And this isn't like, I'm happy that you said healers, because I think that also includes like medical professionals, people who are entrusted mm-hmm. with like being in close proximity and seeing people at their worst oftentimes. I think it's like an expansive, I just want to throw yeah. that out there, because I've encountered people who are like, I'm a nurse, and like have just the most atrocious politics, and you're like, I understand that it's not part of your schooling to go and like understand how the world works and systemic oppression, but like you engage with people on a day-to-day basis and you're seeing them at their most vulnerable state.
Totally.
So like, how can you not have a more empathetic, inquisitive, informed mindset?
Totally. And for me, I look at what are the roots of the Western medical system? What are the roots of psychiatry? What are the roots of psychology? Because so much of it was founded and created by white cishet men with a lot of power who mm. in a lot of cases were very violent.
Right.
And I think that, I mean, that's the basis for everything that was built. I mean, there's been people who try to challenge it, but I think honestly that's why there's so many problems in those fields, is because that's, you know, that those were the people who trained the next people who trained the next people who trained right. the next people.
Right.
Those of us who are wellness practitioners, I really want us to be rethinking what is our role in our communities. And I start to think back to trying to imagine outside of this colonial white supremacist context
mm-hmm.
and what were the roles that we occupied in our communities, and thinking of it that way. And that's where I really start to feel the sacredness of what we do and start to think about, so how should I be showing up in my community outside of the therapy room?
Right.
And I also want to see close relationships between our activists and our healers. So if we understand that healing and liberation are inextricable, then we understand that we need to be in the same spaces and we need to infuse our political spaces with healing and vice versa. And I want us to imagine new spaces that encompass both on levels that we haven't reached yet or haven't imagined yet.
Right. Wouldn't yeah. that be fucking awesome? I'm so excited.
Yeah.
I'm just so, it makes me excited.
Yeah. I keep thinking about this. If there's any activists and healers out there who are thinking about this too, like, I would love for you to get in touch with me, because I really want to be taking this to the next level.
Yeah.
And I need collaboration for that. So, and let's talk more generally about work we can all be doing for ourselves. So there's a famous Audre Lorde quote, "Caring for myself is not self-indulgence, it is self-preservation, and that is an act of political warfare." Have you heard that
before? Never heard that before. Oh. I never heard that before, but I think I've heard it in other contexts, like not like that,
or,
like referenced yeah. or kind of that idea that like self-care is just like you doing what you need to do for yourself so you can take care of others, and like yeah. that's a necessary basis. And I want to take this quote in church with my mommy, because I feel Aww. Like it's something that she would really,
yeah.
like, it would serve her really well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And sometimes this quote gets depoliticized, which should be impossible with the words political warfare in there. But
you just strike it out.
But it does. It's it like gets watered.
Bad feelings.
Yeah. It gets watered down to just mean treat yourself. And I'm not yeah. saying don't treat yourself, but it isn't about soothing ourselves in ways that make us disconnect from our pain and anger and the reality of our lives and our world. Because it can be important to take breaks from our pain, for sure. And mm-hmm. we absolutely yeah. must cultivate joy and rest and peace in our lives. But it's not about living in a privilege bubble or comfort bubble because that feels good.
Yeah.
It's about cultivating the conditions for ourselves that allows us to live full lives and experience the sweetness and the life-affirming feelings that will give us the strength to survive the pain and trauma and oppression of the world. And more than just survive, like, it's about keeping ourselves fully alive and present. And that means all of us, our whole selves, being the radical, queer, Black and brown women that we are, with the full range of our feelings and all of the information that that gives us. Because people in power would rather that we numb those feelings and hide who we are
and not say anything and be very quiet and not have this podcast and all that kind of shit.
Exactly, and disconnect and isolate. So we have to make sure to keep our whole selves here and keep our whole selves in our communities.
Yes.
So what are ways to do that?
What are ways to do that?
Yeah, what are things that make you feel like super alive and connected and whole?
Honestly, I find myself oscillating between like wanting to be alone and like taking in information and then wanting to talk to friends and be around people and share. Mm-hmm. Connecting with people has always been something that Scorpio rising. I love people. I've always loved people. So yeah, it's really just trying my best to be in community with others.
Yeah, that's huge.
Which is hard sometimes too, because I'm like, I equally enjoy being by myself, and sometimes I can find being around others to be like a energy suck. Mm-hmm. I think it's just recognizing what works best for you.
And the balance.
The balance, yeah.
I think we need both for sure. And prioritizing our wellness and our healing, which can be really hard.
It is hard. Like I said, it took me like a year and a half to even get to therapy. It's not like all of us are like, ooh, I want to walk wholeheartedly in that direction. Sometimes we don't want to touch that shit with a 10-foot pole.
Totally.
Right? Because we are aware of all the things that it's going to unearth potentially. And that was my biggest fear is like, what is all the shit that's going to get fucked up in my life if I start doing therapy?
Yeah. You know? That's so huge. Or there's, you know, other things to spend your money on.
Right.
Or you feel like, you know, I don't have time, I'm too busy, I need to be working, or I'm supporting other people, or using my money to support other people.
Rather than.
I'm not trying to say to not do that, but at a certain point, we also have to put the oxygen mask on ourselves first.
Exactly.
Because otherwise we're going to pass out.
You're going to pass out?
Can't help anybody.
Yeah.
I think outlets are really important. So it could be anything, whether writing, whether that's creative or just journaling, art, how you express yourself through fashion, mm-hmm. running, dancing, like any of these things that just help you to channel your energy.
Mm-hmm. I would say also like telling the truth, being honest. Mm. And this is big, right? This is like living a life of integrity is what I wanted to say. But like allowing the words that you say to be congruent with how you're feeling.
Right.
And not allowing the expectations or the vantage points of others deter how you see yourself and how you want to show up for yourself.
Yes.
Right?
Totally.
That's super tough, I know, because we live in proximity to other people who have expectations and demands and perceptions of us.
Yeah.
But I think getting to that place is key.
Yeah. And I do think that not being able to tell the truth, it really affects your health in mm-hmm. all kinds of ways, mental health and physical health, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And it can be a bubble bath. Like sometimes that's the cliche depoliticized self-care thing that people say. But at the same time, baths are cheap and they can help with physical pain and they can bring down your stress level. That's it, you know, if you're among the lucky parts of the population that has access to safe, clean water, because a lot of Indigenous folks within Canada's borders don't even have that.
Yeah.
So, which is why, again, everything is political.
Yeah.
Barriers to wellness are very real and they're a very big part of this picture.
Yeah.
So we can never forget it, ever.
Yeah.
But the point is we need to be doing things that support our wellness and our well-being and our joy, so that we can show up and be here and be the people that we need to be in mm-hmm. the world.
Totally.
And there's so many folks out there, especially queer and trans women of color, who are so dedicated to trying to make the world better, but then find it so hard to prioritize their well-being because we live in a world where we're taught that we don't matter. And we do. We all need to be here. We need you to be here and be well, and not just today and tomorrow, but 10 years from now, 20 years from now, 50 years from now. That's why we need to care for ourselves. So just want to implore all of the people of color out there, and especially queer and trans people of color, please take care of yourselves, because we love you and we need you and we need you to be here.
Mm.